Hello, everybody. It's Dacia. You're about to hear my chat with the amazing Hilary Hahn, wherein we talk about the discipline and the practice that went into her most recent album of Bach partitas and sonatas. So Hilary started this thing called 100 Days of Practice, which you can see on Instagram, and she records herself practicing for 100 days straight. It's a challenge that you can participate in, and a lot of people have started doing it. I think she may be on round two or three of this by now. But it got me thinking, like, how much practice does it actually take for her? Like, how much practicing does a pro like Hilary Hahn really need to put in? The level of work that people in the classical music world is something that has always really just bowled me over and inspired me to do more work on my own. It always makes me feel a little bit lazy, actually. But we also talk about what it's like to live so closely with music in the way that Hilary has done with the work of Bach over the years. P.S. Make sure to listen through to the end of the episode because there's a very special treat performed by yours truly at the end. Oh, and a little thank you to all of our listeners out there who've subscribed to, rated, and reviewed the show on iTunes and other platforms. We super appreciate it. Hey, you could be as cool as them in just a few easy clicks. Boom, boom, done. All right, and now a word from our sponsor. Would you like to hear some new holiday music? Yes, please. The Nutcracker Special Edition CD and MP3 from Maestro Classics is a one-hour adaptation of Tchaikovsky's famous ballet that includes music from every scene, unlike the Nutcracker Suite, which only has an abbreviated overture and some dances from Act 2. Conductor Stephen Simon, who also created well-known performance editions of Handel's operas and oratorios, arranged this unique one-hour edition of the Nutcracker with the London Philharmonic Orchestra. Hear it today at maestroclassics.com and save 17% with the code CLASSROOM. All right, and now on with the show! There's a rumor going around that classical music can be hoity-toity. But here in the classical classroom, we beg to differ.
Beethoven 5.
The idea that classical music is a zone where we have to feel restricted or we have to act in a certain way, you know, that's not going to be helpful going forward.
Isaiah is shaking with excitement. Oh,
I mean, there's just so many great parts of the opera.
He asked me to play his favorite spot in the first movement of the Brahms. And then he said, I started using those licks in my guitar solos.
How to be classical music rock stars, because there's not enough of that in this business.
Occasionally, I would plug in the mandolin to my distortion pedals.
I don't change my voice.
And talking to classical music.
I'm playing classical music now. I mean, it's the same 12 notes. That's what's so cool about it.
I'm Dacia Clay, a classical music newbie, and I'm trying to learn all I can about the music. Come learn with me and the classical music experts I invite into the Classical Classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. Welcoming back to the classroom for a second time, multiple Grammy Award-winning violinist Hilary Hahn, which is what you have to say about every Grammy Award winner, that they are one. She was last on the show several years ago to talk about the violinist and composer Henri Vieuxtemps. Today, we'll be talking about the work and discipline that went into her new album, Bach's Partita No. 1 and Sonatas 1 and 2. Hilary, welcome.
Thank you.
So you and your violin case, by the way, are big on the Insta. And last year you did this project called 100 Days of Practice, where you posted videos of yourself practicing for 100 days straight. And I'm assuming that a lot of that practice was going into this album. And I was just wondering, these videos that you post, they're really cool. And they're, but they're only like a minute long. We only see like a minute of you doing this each day. What was the actual nitty-gritty of your process? Like, how long were you practicing? When were you doing it? All that kind of stuff.
Sometimes that minute is my entire practice session for the day.
Oh, really? Wow.
It just depends. Like, there are days when I normally might just skip practice. And this is what happened the first time around. It's not been the case so much this time, but I'm in the middle of the second 100 days. I took a break from the process and now I've restarted it. I started maybe, I guess, a month ago or so. So I've got until early November to practice every day.
Oh my God.
You really should practice every day, but sometimes if you're traveling or you're just tired or you're sick or whatever, you just don't. And that's fine too. But in committing to doing 100 in a row, I found that sometimes the day would just run away from me. There were a couple times when I would actually be almost asleep, lights out in the hotel room. I'd be drifting off to sleep, and I would be like, the practice video! I didn't practice today! And this would be, you know, mid-jet lag. I'd have arrived at the hotel, you know, gone and gotten something to eat. I'm like, oh my goodness, what a big day. I did everything I could possibly do. And yeah, I was really glad that there was that voice in my head that was my conscience that said, practice. You didn't practice. So that was interesting.
Yeah, like what, you're a crazy, busy person, you got lots going on in your life. And I mean, I'm sure there are days when you're doing this 100 days process where you just would super rather be doing something else. Like, what is it that keeps you going then? I mean, aside from the fact that, you know, thousands of people are watching you on Instagram.
The people like, will remind me.
What else keeps you going?
Well, I think that actually I'm happier when I practice every day. So I appreciate a project like this. It kind of keeps me reminded to go back to the essential things. And I've noticed that, so last time I was kind of getting used to the technological aspect of practicing every day, the psychological aspect. I drifted away from daily practice. Not far, but somewhat. And it helped me get back into a groove with it where I was thinking about things long term. I wasn't just practicing for the performance. I was practicing and through recording it on video, and you know, Instagram limited me to a minute. So I would just cut it down. I would just be practicing what I was practicing. I would record a stretch of it, and I wouldn't practice something special for the recording. It wasn't like a teaching tool or anything. It was just a documentation of what was happening. And whittling it down to a minute, in checking that it had uploaded, in making sure that the sound continued all the way through the video, for example, I would wind up watching the same minute at least 6 times. And I started noticing things about my playing, about the phrasing, about what I thought I'd been doing that I wasn't doing, or what I was doing that I wasn't aware that I was doing. And since I tend to do the video kind of early on in my practice day, it would give me something to work on for the rest of the day. Whereas left to my own devices, I would kind of get in a loop. I would kind of work on the same sorts of things that I thought I needed to work on. But seeing it over and over again really helped me improve my playing. And I looked forward to doing it again, but I wanted to make sure that when I did it again, I could be sure to do 100 days in a row, because I realized the first time around, 100 days isn't just 100. It's almost, you know, it's a third of a year almost.
Yeah,
it's a number of months.
Crazy.
And time goes and the seasons change and you're still doing the project. So yeah. I also encountered some technological challenges the first time, and I was very specific about posting everything on the day that I recorded it. Whereas sometimes the Wi-Fi, it would take me 8 hours to get it posted. And so this time around, I thought, okay, well, I'm going to try. And if I can't, I'll just post it when I get good Wi-Fi. But I'm going to do the practice every day anyway. So it's interesting. You know, a project like that becomes partly a technicality and partly a huge artistic step.
Yeah.
And this time around, it's really much easier to actually do the technical aspects because I've done it before and I don't have to remind myself to practice every day or anything like that. But I also know the impact it has on people, and I know what they enjoyed about it the first time around when it was really just for myself the first time around. I didn't think that it would mean anything to anyone. Now when I put the hashtag 100 days of practice in, you know, and it prompts me, it says 100-something thousand posts under that hashtag, and I think I created that hashtag, so that's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
It makes me feel connected to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's really cool. If you go on there, you can see if you just type in that hashtag, like all of these people who followed suit, who are like, all right, I'm going to do this thing too.
So undramatic, but it's actually so revealing for a lot of people to post the unfinished product, but that's what we live with most of the time. The concert is just this fleeting moment when everything happens at the same time and you can't stop and redo it. It is just what it is.
Yeah. I'm wondering, like, so after all of that practice, especially with Bach's work over a lifetime, you've been playing this music for something like 35 years because you've been playing since you were like a toddler, and there's been 21 years between these two albums. Has it become easier? Has all of this practice made it easier to say what needs to be said in the music? I mean, that's how I always think about practice, is like it kind of helps you develop the tools of expression better. Would you, like, what can you say better now, or is that even true for you?
Definitely. I think also performing has helped me become better. Performing is where everything starts to make sense. And I find that practice only gets you so far, but when you actually play something for an audience and you play it in a concert hall where you have a high level of adrenaline and a high level mm-hmm. of focus from all directions, you sense the focus from all directions. You know, I've discovered this with world premieres. So I can practice it. I think I know what the piece is, but I've never heard it played by anyone else because I'm the first person to play it. I get it in front of an audience, and then I understand what it is. And so I have to almost perform something to improve it. And I think a lot of people look at performance as the final goal, and they get unnerved if it doesn't go perfectly or if it feels different from how it was in practice. But for me, even as a little kid, my teachers always encouraged me to look at a performance as part of the process. Think after the performance, what would I do differently next time? What can I work on that I learned in the performance? And since now as a professional, I get an opportunity to play the same thing multiple times in multiple places for different kinds of audiences, I feel like it really is a big picture and it's not just about one concert. So in a way, obviously performing is not practicing, but practicing is not performing, but they are all part of the same arc.
Yeah.
Definitely, the more you do something, the more comfortable you are with it. The first time I play something, even if other people have played it before, but I haven't, I feel like my heart's going to explode. Like, I feel like I'm just going to stop breathing or something's going to happen because it is such an intense surge of adrenaline. But then I get through it and I survive. Everything's fine. Everyone is fine. You know, the peace exists. Everything is like it was before. Okay, reassess. All right, now let's do it again. And the second, third, fourth, fifth times I play a piece, it feels totally different from the first time or the previous time. And with all of those different experiences, you then get a bigger picture of what the piece means to you. And all of that becomes fodder for creativity every time you take that piece on stage.
Okay, so I'm taking a little break from my chat with Hilary Hahn to tell you guys about our new website. It's at classicalclassroomshow.com, and it's got some really awesome new features, including free downloadable lesson plans and study guides for you teachers. All of our previous episodes are there. You can find ways to connect with us. And there's a little button that says Tip Jar, where you can leave us a one-time or recurring gift of any amount that you like if you want to support the work that we do on the podcast. And as you'll hear at the end of this episode, we'll give you stuff for it. P.S. If you want a website that's as cool as ours, you should contact our friends at New Y. They made it for us, and they can make you a great site, too. They can also help you promote it. For more information about New Y, go to classicalclassroomshow.com/NW. That's N as in new and W as in Y. The creative process is so fascinating. I've been reading this book by David Lynch where he talks about people recognizing him in public, and he's like, I don't really care about that. It's about the work. It's not even about the completion of the project. It's just the work itself, which I thought was a really cool thing to say instead of seeing an end, like just seeing it as a continuum.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see this like that? Like you're saying practicing and like performing are kind of part and parcel? Is that
they
you see
are.
It as a big whole?
Yeah, you know, as a student, I always felt like a performance was an arrival, because after the performance of this thing I'd been learning and practicing, I would go on to a new piece. I would start to learn a new piece, and I would be building my repertoire that way. Now I finish a performance, and I might be playing it in a different place with different colleagues the next week, or I might not play it for a while, but I know I'm coming back to it. And what I learned in that particular performance, the new things I got to try, or the ideas that my colleagues showed me in the moment on stage, I bring those with me into the next performance, into the next practice session. And I really feel like I'm a sort of conglomerate of all of these experiences, all of these interactions with other people. Other people might have the same set of experiences and make something very different out of it, but for me, I'm not a self-generated individual. I am a sort of a melting pot of all of these different influences.
I really like that you're cool with that, you know, because I think that a lot of people have this misconception that creative people, musicians, are like somehow an island, like you said about being self-generated. It's like people have this idea that being autonomous as a creative person is a goal. But anyhow, I think that we should put all of the talk that we've done about practice to work, as it were, and talk about the music itself.
Sounds great.
So I want to give your new album just a little bit of context. You put out your first album of Bach solo violin music in 1997 when you were just a wee Hillary at 17. Now you're 38, and apparently after years of people asking you to finish what you started, you put out this new album of Bach solo violin music. How does the new album complete what was happening on the last one?
So there's a set of six works by Johann Sebastian Bach that were written quite a while ago, centuries ago, and they're called sonatas and partitas. There are three sonatas and three partitas. The difference is that the partitas tend to be stylized dance movements, and the sonatas tend to be more typical classical concept pieces. So it's three sonatas, three partitas, and there are individual parts of each of these pieces that are very familiar to people who listen to classical music. I think the preludio from the E major partita is one of those. Kind of a common theme that you hear pop up, even you know, excerpted in other genres. And for the first record, I wasn't intending to record the whole set, although that's something that people do. They do all six. I just was going to make my first record, and the company asked me what I wanted to record, and I said, I want to record some pieces of solo Bach because it's the most familiar repertoire for me, and I play it all the time. And I think it reflects who I am as a result. And to fill a CD, three fit. So I picked three that I was most familiar with. They happened to be the last three in chronological order of the set. But there was no rhyme or reason to that. It was just that those were the ones that I happened to know the best. And now that left three not recorded, and people really wanted the rest of it. And since I play them kind of all the time, I didn't feel an urgent need to plan to record the rest of it. I figured it would just happen when it needed to happen. Yeah. And I didn't feel the need to make it happen because I liked having the project open. But then eventually I thought, well, you know, enough time has passed. It's probably a good idea to circle back and wrap up that particular part of my musical life.
Yeah.
Just the fact that I started to record a set and maybe I should finish it.
Thank you.
You, like, already have this built-in audience that's wanting to hear you do something instead of having to sort of coax people into it and get them to listen.
I mean, it's nice when something is asked for. There are a lot of projects you want to do that you have to introduce to people. And when people want to have something and they're asking you for it, it's kind of an easy thing to think about doing.
That's a pretty awesome place to be. Hillary Hahn, thank you so much for taking the time to chat today.
This is too much fun.
Yeah.
This is the kind of stuff I love to talk about.
Congrats on the new album, by the way.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
You too.
All right, that does it for this episode of Classical Classroom. For more Classroom, go to classicalclassroomshow.com, where you can find all the ways to connect with us that you could ever want. And you can do many more things like download free lesson plans, etc. As always, you can email us at classicalclassroomshow@gmail.com. Thanks today to the home of Classical Classroom, King FM in Seattle. Home is wherever we're with you. Thanks to our birthplace, Houston Public Media. Thanks to the official staple supplier of Classical Classroom, Milton Swingline Staplers. Thanks to Hillary Hahn for being on the show. Thanks to me for saying words. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time. Okay, kids, it's time for a new segment of the podcast in which I embarrass myself called Did You Ever Know That You're Our Heroes? Wherein we thank the people who've given to this show by singing them a little ditty. All right, here we go. Did you ever know that you're our heroes, Sergio Campo Diaz? You gave to the podcast that was cool. And we'll produce more now that you've given. 'Cause you, Sergio Campo Diaz, are the wind beneath our podcast wings. If you'd like to be sung to on this podcast, you weirdo, you can make a one-time or recurring gift of as much or as little as you'd like at classicalclassroomshow.com. Just click on the little button that says Tip Jar. And this, too, could be all yours.